Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Killer Bees!
Live from Apollo Men's Health for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing from Pearland?
He's Joel. I'm Jeremy. It is a Friday edition to The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. And yes, indeed, we are in Pearland, Apollo Men's Health. Patrick Creighton's up here hanging out with us, too.
Yeah,
he's getting looked at by Dr. O. So you swing on by. We'll be here till 3 at Apollo Men's Health. You can ask them while you're here about the variety of services like the hormone replacement therapy, body composition analysis. Here till 3 at the Pearland location. This is, you know, a place that you frequent quite
love
often.
Love this place. I'm here every Friday anyway. I'm here today for the remote. Got my B12 shot. Got the wonderful staff here to take care of me, as they always do, with a smile on their face and gloves on their hands. And we'll leave it there. But they're fantastic people, and then they all still work for Dr. O. And that's saying something in itself, because Dr. O knows what he's doing.
Yeah, that sounds like a good way of putting that, I suppose. So Texans-Colts on Sunday. It's the big game in the NFL. It does have a lot of significance. The Houston Texans, of course, their significance is they want to embrace the suck. They want to lose. They want to increase the likelihood of having a top three draft pick. The Colts still very much involved in the AFC playoff race. Texans aren't getting much respect from those folks there in Indy. I was listening to some of the player press conferences throughout the week, and usually it's like, okay, what do you think of the team that you're about to play? Like, the Texans being asked about Jonathan Taylor, right. Being asked about Carson Wentz, being asked about playing a team that's pretty good and in playoff contention. I was listening to T.Y. Hilton, Jonathan Taylor, and Darius Leonard. You know how many times the Texans were brought up?
None.
Zero.
Really?
Zero. Like, it was combined 30 minutes, probably, of Q&A with the three Colts players. Zero. The only time they brought up anything relative to Houston was they kind of try to trick T.Y. Hilton to saying that he owns the Texans.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, what do you think about when you go to NRG Stadium? He's like, look, I just run the routes. I just do what the coach tells me. That was it.
So that's culture, Jeremy. That's part of being trained in the culture of a quality program that you don't stir up and give locker room material to the opponent. But you know what? I could see Jonathan Taylor as a young player not doing it, not saying it, not getting into it. T.Y. has every reason in the world to basically say, look, every time I see that uniform and go up against those guys, I know I'm ready to have a big game. I would think that Leonard's the kind of guy because, you know, he's outspoken and he is one of the better players at his position in the league, that he would say some things about, hey, they're not what they used to be, or at least be honest. I don't expect billboard material per se, but I would expect that they would acknowledge their opponent to some degree.
And look, a lot of it's just, it's the questioning, right? Like, a lot of the players can't always, you know, they're not going to just change the topic of the conversation when they're being asked, like, why didn't you run the ball more last week? Or, like, the big topic of conversation during these, like, pressures was like, oh, yeah, Quentin Nelson. He went to Frank Reich during the game and said, feed Jonathan Taylor, give him the football. Like, that was the topic of conversation. So it's not even so much the players. It's like the indie media. Like, they're not even asking about storylines from the game on Sunday. They're not even asking about the opponent that they're about to play. It's not even the Colts that are overlooking the Texans. It's like indie media. They couldn't care less that it's the Texans that they're about to have to watch their Colts team play. So it gives you an idea of where the Houston Texans stand among people who follow the NFL.
But did you expect,
it's a lookover.
I mean, did you expect anything
differently?
I mean, this is a must-win for them as they try to hang on to any aspirations of making the playoffs. And they know in the process, especially from the media, they look at it from the process of going, hey, we're going to have tougher games down the road. This is one that we should already chalk up in the win column. And they see what the Texans are doing, and they know in the back of their minds that it's ideal for them to lose the football game. So I'm sure they're also thinking the same way that we're all thinking, which is it's in the best interest of both teams as they progress this season. Texans need to lose. Colts have to have a win. That's the way it should go.
They both want the same result on Sunday. They all want a Colts win and a Texan loss. All 106 players that will be active in that game. The players don't, but the fans there at NRG Stadium should. Meanwhile, I was watching the Texans press conference, because this is what I do, because this is what I do in my life, is I watch press conferences all day. Anyways, they were at Tim Kelly, offense coordinator for the Houston Texans, was talking to the media yesterday. And what's been the topic of conversation this week about the play calling for the Houston Texans? David Culley was asked on Sunday, should you change play callers? Our very own Cody Stutes asking him that. He got asked about it again on Monday. Well, why aren't you changing play callers? You have the very worst offense in the NFL. You're dead last in DVOA. How come play calling isn't something that you're willing to, you know, consider making a change in? So I expected Tim Kelly to kind of get some hard-hitting questions, right? Like, I expect, okay, well, why is the offense, you know, not doing very well? Are you the guy that should be calling the offensive plays here? He got asked one time during a six-minute press conference that was any sort of criticism at all, and it came from the general. And like, even the way the general phrases this question, like, he kind of gives Tim Kelly a little bit of an excuse, a little bit of an out. Check it out.
Yeah, it's obviously not an ideal situation, but we get paid to figure it out. So, you know, we've got to do a better job. I've got to do a better job of figuring out how to make sure that we have more efficient runs and more success in that area. So that's why we're here early, stay late, and try and make sure we can do a better job of getting that done.
Tim Kelly asked by the general why, you know, he tried, like, that was the only critical question, really, to Tim Kelly, I thought. And he was asked by John McClain, basically, like, you don't have a running game. So whenever you don't have a running game, why does that make it so difficult to do what you're trying to do, right? So, like, even the way that the question was phrased, I thought was pretty weak. Like, if you have the guy that everybody's criticizing, the media's been criticizing him towards David Culley, don't you have to ask a few tough questions to the offensive coordinator whenever he's there behind
yes,
the podium?
But it's a bigger issue, Jeremy, as you and I have talked about in the past about Houston sports media. It's one thing to say when you're Dwight Howard and you played for the Lakers, and if anything happened, it would have been front page news, let alone sports news, and they were going to be all over you. It's another thing to say that in the history of the fourth largest city in America, it's the easiest sports market media to ever deal with, because really, aside from Barry Warner, and his days are numbered with Asian sports, agent whatever he's with, Asian media, he's not where he used to be, where he used to go to every press conference, everybody identified him by name and knew that if there was something going on, he was going to call me on it. And that's where Houston media at least had at least one guy that could do what they needed to do to get done what needed to get done. Now you look at it and go, who in the media in Houston? It's like Monty Hall. They'd rather make a deal and say, we'll sweep it under the rug and won't touch it if you give us a one-on-one with Nick Caserio before the draft. And it's all about wheeling and dealing instead of being the person to do the job you're supposed to do, which is the hard-hitting questions. Let them answer them how they will. They might want to not answer it at all, but at least you did your job and asked the question. Across sports media, across the major sports teams, they don't do that here.
Yeah, the way it was phrased was just like, okay, this is an excuse for you. I'm giving you kind of like a way out on this as well. Like, I'm not of the opinion. Look, I get that it's difficult. It's a very bad team. They're 2-9. Their offense is abysmal. They're dead last in pretty much every, you know, offensive category you want to look at. They're dead last in yards per game. I'm a DVOA guy. They're dead last in DVOA. Like, they're just not a good team. So I understand it's a tough situation for Tim Kelly.
Explain to the listeners what DVOA is.
It's just like an advanced metric that, like, gives you a rating based on the defenses that you play. It's just not as simple as, like, yards per game. It's a little bit more, like, advanced yards per play, who are you playing, what are the weighted metrics, stuff like that.
Got it.
I give it more stock than what I give just, like, yards per game, which if you look at the offensive stuff, I mean, abysmal. The defensive stuff, pretty good. The Texans are up to number 8 in DVOA in defense. Like, it gives you an idea that Lovie Smith knows what he's doing, when I actually think that the defense has less talent on that side of the ball than the offense does. Like, the offense, at least you have some pros, right? Like, you have Tyrod Taylor, who,
yeah,
well, probably a top 35 quarterback in the NFL, top 40 quarterback in the NFL, like somewhere in that
but
range.
But how do you weigh that?
Brandon Cooks is a good player.
But how do you weigh that? Because it's kind of like a catch-22. More experienced NFL players on the offensive side, more production on the defensive side, because you have an experienced defensive coordinator that really knows what he's doing in the position that he's in.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you know, you look at it from different ways for depending on each side of the football.
Yeah, I'm just for like a personnel though.
Okay.
Like, if you're looking at it from personnel, and let's say you were a coach and you're evaluating what the Houston Texans have from like a talent standpoint, which side of the ball do you think has more talent? See, to me, it's clearly the offensive
offense
side.
Because assuming if you're healthy and you have Tunsil and you have a first and second round pick on the offensive line as well as Tunsil, and then you look, like you said, you have a Cooks, you have experience in the backfield, whether they can do anything at all or not, between Tyrod Taylor and David Johnson and whoever the head is, the Woodhead, the Burkhead that you throw in there from the Patriots in the backfield. You have experience. I get that. You're right. Because you look at the defensive side, a lot of either inexperience or guys that are trying to make their resume look better to have a chance to somewhere next year. Yes. But I think that Lovie Smith has done more with less as opposed to Tim Kelly, who's done less with more.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think Lovie Smith is going to be a defensive coordinator who's back with this team next year. I don't think there's going to be wholesale changes on this staff. The offensive coordinator spot is something that needs to change. Not now. Like, I've been pretty vocal on there shouldn't be a change now. Like, even if it's Pep Hamilton that you want to get a look at, I don't want to get a look at Pep Hamilton because you might ruin his status and his resume because he doesn't have the weapons that you need to be a decent play caller. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, 8620 saying Houston needs Trent from Ted Lasso. You don't watch TV shows, but Trent Krim of The Independent.
I do watch TV shows. I don't watch that one.
Ted, that's a great TV show. Ted Lasso's outstanding.
I didn't say good. I'm not criticizing because I haven't seen it, but I do watch TV shows. I just don't watch that one. But if that's the way you want to play it, fine, so be it.
One of the things that I picked up on, too, like listening to Tim Kelly talk, listening to David Culley talk, going to the website and listening to the general manager of the Houston Texans, Nick Caserio, talk, they speak glowingly about the versatility of Tytus Howard. And, like, that's great for a player to be versatile. But the reason that it bothers me is whenever it's your – let's say second-best talent on the offensive line behind Laremy Tunsil, who's been out for a while with a broken thumb. But Tytus Howard's one of your top two offensive linemen, right? There's no doubt about it in terms of at least potential and skill and promise and upside. You shouldn't be worrying about a dude's versatility whenever he's your top two offensive lineman. You should be, okay, what is this guy's best position? We're going to stick him at that position, build around him on the offensive line. He's going to be an anchor, and we're going to develop him at his position. Like, it's great that Tytus has versatility. It's awesome that he can bounce around from right tackle to right guard to left tackle. That's outstanding. But whenever he's your top two offensive line talent, find a position for him and develop him the best you can. That way he can reach his potential. Well, bouncing him around is deterring his potential.
Yeah, we talked about this the other day, and I couldn't agree more in the fact that, look, it's one thing if you have a journeyman or a backup and you're supposed to be able to play multiple positions. It's another thing when you were a first-round draft pick and you expect for not only for the sake of the team but also for the sake of saving face from a personnel standpoint that you drafted the right guy that's going to be there. That continuity is important. As well as you play your own individual position, that is a unit for a reason on the offensive line. And that means that everybody has to come together as a unit. If you keep playing musical positions like musical chairs with a guy that's been drafted as high as Tytus Howard, you are not allowing him to reach his full potential at any one position because he's playing multiples, and that's not how you get better as an offensive unit.
No, yeah, I think it's a terrible idea with how they're using him. Like, pick a spot for him, let him grow that. And I think he's a better tackle than a guard. I think it's pretty obvious,
right,
too. Like, the versatility, it's great that he can do it. He can't play guard well. He needs to play tackle. I'm hoping it's left tackle and they trade Laremy Tunsil in the offseason because I'm all about the draft capital. That should be priority number one with this team. Anyway, anyhow, draft capital. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776 if you want to get in. Our faces are on Twitch. We're not actually on Twitch today, but you can check out the chat, twitch.tv/ESPN975. We're wearing black shirts. Joel looks tough. I'm smiling. He likes to say
lipstick.
I have lipstick on, which isn't the case. We're out at Apollo Men's Health in Pearland till 3. Swing on by. Say hello to us. We're also on Twitter. He's at Pac-Man Joel. I'm at Jeremy Branham. When we return, the lockout in Major League Baseball. Mike Stanton calls it a signing freeze. Everybody else is calling it a lockout. Is it good or bad for Carlos Correa? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Apollo Men's Health. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's give away a pay-per-view code to watch the big fight on Sunday. Tank Davis, Pitbull Cruz, Sunday night, 8 Eastern, 7 Central, lightweight championship of the world. Going to give away a pay-per-view code to watch that fight for free right now as the unbeaten 5-time world champ in boxing's hottest attraction, Gervonta Tank Davis, will defend his lightweight championship against hard-hitting Isak Pitbull Cruz in an explosive showdown Sunday, December 5th, 8 Eastern, 7 Central, 5 Pacific, live on pay-per-view. Caller number 5 right now to 713-780-3776. Caller number 5, 713-780-3776. We'll watch that fight for free on Sunday night. All right, baseball has been locked down. Robert Manfred has locked it up. The players on the website, their faces have been grayed out. They took all the pictures off of the website on every single team's website. They've also taken any story of any current Major League Baseball player off of MLB.com, off of Astros.com, whatever the case may be. Is the lockout a good or a bad thing for Carlos Correa?
I don't think it affects him at all. I think it's just it's indifferent because he's going to get paid one way or another. And as we talked about, he has already done the work necessary to get what he's going to get, regardless of what the new collective bargaining agreement is and when it's all settled. Sure, there's some uncertainty from everybody's perspective when you stop getting checks. But at the same time, unlike like the middle-tier free agents to the guys that are journeymen at this point in their careers that have to worry about, you know, rosters and space and availability and you know, how much money is going to be left in the pot for them and what teams are going to be willing to spend for all the money they spent prior to the lockout, Correa's not one of those guys. He sat back and let everybody get theirs, and all they did was kind of set the market and make sure that he, at the top of his position, is going to get as much or more than just about anybody else out there. So he just kicks back and hangs out with Daniela and waits for the baby to arrive and goes, you know what, my day's coming. I can't tell you when. I don't care because I know that unlike everybody else that's got some level of uncertainty, he has none.
Yeah, I think it's hot takey, right, to have a stance one way or the other. It's like, okay, well, baseball's locking out. Everything's going to be on a freeze. How else can we talk about baseball, right? Like, if you want to have true transparency, I think it's people trying to create a way to talk about Carlos Correa, try to talk about Major League Baseball. I'm with you. Like, the lockout isn't going to affect what Correa gets at the end of the day. If there was no lockout, he's still going to get whatever he gets. If there is the lockout, he's still going to get whatever he gets. The only thing that changes is when he signs. He didn't sign before the December 2nd deadline for the lockout. He's going to sign after. Yeah. He's going to get paid just as much money as he got paid before.
Now let me ask you this, and maybe we're not there yet because we kept talking about who was the guy that's going to be left holding the bag hoping for someone to contribute. Trevor Story doesn't have the same level of confidence that Carlos Correa does. He's going to get his, but you still got to firmly believe he's going to get a lot of money. He might not get Correa-type money, but he might be the one guy that gets a lesser-than deal than he thought he was going to get at the start of all this, but he's still going to get paid handsomely.
The only way that free agents are going to get more money post-lockout than pre-lockout is if the luxury tax threshold increases, and I think increases significantly, and I don't believe it is going to increase significantly. Maybe they raise it at some point, but I also think they're going to escalate it where, you know, next year it's going to be about the same. Then 2 to 3 years down the road, maybe it's up $5 million. 3 to 5 years down the road, then it's up $10 million, something along those lines. Buster Olney was on the Wheelhouse earlier this week and talked about Corey Seager signing. And he thinks Seager might get paid more than Correa?
I did a piece, actually, that came out in mid-October examining the elite shortstops. And people I was talking to were saying they thought Seager would get more than Carlos. Carlos had a phenomenal postseason. It was like he had an audition tape with the hits and the defense and the leadership that he was demonstrating on the field. But all along, there are questions about his lower back, you know, that he's gotten treatment on. And I don't know if that's impacting. From what I understand, at some point during the process, what teams are being told is that they could only access that information if they made a significant offer. And I think there was a feeling among the teams that, like, you know, hey, is this a chicken or the egg? Like, we're not going to make a significant offer until we know exactly what's going on with his lower back. And I don't know if that's affected what's happened, but the people I talked to did not expect that Carlos was going to get more than Seager was.
Do you believe that the medicals on Carlos Correa's back is the reason that Correa doesn't have a $325 million 10-year deal at this point?
No, I don't. I don't. I think it's because as a smart agent, and with them in the Correa camp playing the game the way it's supposed to be played, they're supposed to sit back right now and, like I said, let the market be set for him. Let the market set the tone for what he should expect. And don't if he jumped right out of the gate, the only team he would sign with is the Astros, because he just showed, my desire has been and always will be to be an Astro. I don't care what the market is. I know where I want to be, what makes my family happy, how I want to finish my legacy out in playing baseball. That's where I want to be. Other than that, he's doing it exactly the right way, playing all of his cards the way he should be, because he shouldn't be showing his hand. He shouldn't be talking about signing quickly, because as we've talked about, no matter who it is and how long it takes, competition will push the price up. I think Buster Olney, as much as I respect him as a baseball analyst, I think he's wrong. I don't think Story's going to make more than Carlos Correa, and I don't think he should. Corey Seager. I don't think he's going to make it, and he shouldn't. I don't think that there's any way that sets any tone that says no matter what Seager got, Correa is going to get significantly less. Story, yes. But Carlos Correa, absolutely not. I think Correa is doing it the way he should be doing it, and I don't think anybody should see it any differently. And I also think from a team's perspective, there's no team in America, in one of the big three sports, that says, we're going to make an offer to you before we get your medicals. We're going to see your medicals and see everything we need to see before we make an offer. And if you don't believe that's good enough, then we're probably not going to be able to make a deal. Because unless it's a handshake deal that you can revoke if those medicals don't look good, no one's doing that deal.
And even if you offer the deal before it's the contract is finalized, he's going to have to pass some sort of physical. I believe that the back issue for Carlos Correa is something that's been planted by a team with the in-game trying to be to lower the total dollar amount for Carlos Correa. He just played in every single game of the season. He's been healthier than he's ever been before. He's at like his prime age of his career. What evidence have you seen at all that Carlos Correa had any sort of back trouble this season?
Not this season. Look, the track record states that, you know what, a lot of people, because of the way they're constructed, and sometimes it's completely out of their control, are going to have issues with certain areas of their body breaking down. And he hasn't been healthy through the majority of his career. But you're right, this year he was. It was a contract year. He bet on himself, and now he's going to cash in. It's understandable to have reservations about the fact that he can't stay healthy for 162 on a consistent basis, but it's completely ludicrous to think that anything that he had last season was something that's going to hold you back from signing to a contract, because he proved he can stay healthy.
And he's been about as healthy as Corey Seager, and probably healthier than Corey Seager in his career, and he just got 325 for 10. I believe at the end of the day, Carlos Correa is going to get either more total money than Corey Seager, or he's going to get more per year. The AAV is going to be higher. The fact that Seager would get more, both of those total money, higher AAV, I'm not with Buster Olney on that one as well. One more from Olney joining the Wheelhouse earlier this week. He said he's curious to see how the Correa market ends up shaping up.
I'm really curious to see if any other teams emerge as bidders. I know the Yankees, you know, while they need a shortstop, I think some of their focus has been on trying to save some of their financial ammunition for an Aaron Judge negotiation coming up. I know Seattle, you know, earlier today, last night, some of the agents were talking about how they were making rumblings about adding a third baseman. And, you know, maybe that involves Story. Maybe it would involve Chris Bryant. Maybe Correa in some way would be involved with that. But that doesn't look like it's headed to fruition. So, you know, we'll see if some teams, once rules are put in place, teams like the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Giants, the Dodgers, get more aggressive than they've been to date.
Mark Berman a couple of days ago tweeted that some MLB sources that the agent for Correa has heard from the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Dodgers, the Cubs, and the Braves.
Yeah, the Braves.
Marcus Stroman just signed with the Cubs. He's actually been like tweeting about, saying, hey, Correa, come join us. The Braves is interesting. I think the Braves, because they have Dansby Swanson, that to me is a plan B contingency if they lose Freddie Freeman. You get creative with how you can add some offense. Freeman's gone. You spend the money that you were going to use on Freeman on Correa. Either you move Correa to third, Riley to first, whatever the case may be. There's going to be plenty of interest whenever you – I mean, the teams that Berman mentioned. We went through it the other day, and we had like 10.5 teams that were feasible. Maybe not likely, but feasible. There's going to be plenty of interest for Carlos Correa whenever this is all said.
He shouldn't be worried about it, and there were more teams than we even thought that were going to get involved in the mix, and that tells you whether the agent is again throwing his smoke screen up there for negotiating and bargaining power or not, that you got to believe there's validity to most of that list. I said all along the Cubs are going to be major players. They got rid of them of the majority of their big-time contracts before the trade deadline. Now they can reset the deck by going whichever direction they care to go to. They got Stroman and a guy that's going to at least be a bridge pitcher for them, that's going to do some things for them. But they got plenty of money to spend, and they can find a home for him. Baez is no longer there. Correa could be their guy. They could throw a silly contract at him. And if that's the kind of situation he wants to be in as part of a rebuild, but he's going to take the cash, then so be it. The Red Sox, I didn't think they were going to do something. You were the ones that threw them onto the table. It looks like if they're talking, they're willing to get creative with how they reshuffle their infield just to make him happy. And if he's going to make a decision in his life right now as it comes up with this contract, it really becomes, I saw myself as maybe evolving into a third baseman later in my career when my skills diminish. But if the money doesn't diminish and it goes up higher because I can go to a team that's going to have me play third rather than short, he's probably willing to do that because the paycheck at the end of the day is what's most important and how many years he can get paid.
All things equal, he'd rather play short.
Yep.
But if it's $25 million more to a contract, if he goes to play third as opposed to the highest team that's offering him that he can play shortstop for, I think he'd be willing to play
it's
the hot
A-Rod
corner.
Type deal, right? If sure. A-Rod's getting a chance to play with the Yankees, but he's got to play third instead of short because they got Jeter, but he's going to get paid ridiculously for it, he'll do that, you know, 9 times out of 10, if not 10 out of 10, and so will Carlos Correa.
Rob Parker of FS1. He'll be in town to watch the Texans-Colts on Sunday. He joins us next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Apollo Men's Health. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Broadcasting live at Apollo Men's Health, the Pearland location. Swing on by, say hello to us. We'll be here until 3. Street team hanging out some shirts as well. Let's go straight out to the HR&P guest line. Joining us now, co-host of The Odd Couple, Chris Broussard and Rob Parker on Fox Sports Radio and Deadspin.com. Rob Parker, thanks so much for coming on. Rob, understand you'll be in town to see a little Texans-Colts on Sunday. Why Texans-Colts Sunday? Why was that the game of interest?
What's happening, guys? I'm just actually coming to hang out with some friends and have dinner and hang out. So actually doing a doubleheader. I'm going to go to the Texans game, have some dinner, and then go to the Rockets game. How about that? I'm going to see two of the worst teams in the NFL. I mean, in sports.
That's our pain, Rob. That's what you know who we're living.
It's like the plague or COVID, Rob. You stay away from that. You don't go towards it. You stay away from the fire.
Yeah, no, you know what? Every so often it's good to just get around and see, you know, anybody can be a front runner. Remember that. Anybody. I was down there this summer. I went to an Astros game, and my friends were ranting and raving that the Astros were going to win the World Series and whatnot. So it was just interesting to get out and bounce around the different things. So I love to do that. I love sports. I love to go to, you know, ballparks and stadiums and just get a feel for the town.
Rob, you obviously talked about going to the Texans game, but you're from a national perspective. I'm always interested because we know what we feel like from what we see of the Houston Texans on a daily basis. It's not just the X's and O's week to week. It's the reputation. It's the people pulling the strings, making the decisions. From an outsider's perspective looking in, is this a team that has gotten rid of the whole mantra of the laughingstock of the NFL with the Bill O'Brien era? Or as long as Jack Easterby's there and with some of the moves they've made, is it still a franchise that's in the crosshairs as people going, what the heck are they doing there?
No, I think they haven't done that from the standpoint of, you know, they're in a really bad situation with Deshaun Watson. I mean, that would throw any franchise, you know, into ruins when you have a star quarterback who's not a part of the team anymore and not playing. So I don't think people can honestly do that with the Texans, because prior to this year, they had made the playoffs. Was it 4 out of 6 years? I mean, ask some NFL teams would they like to make the playoffs 4 out of 6 years, and most would sign up for that. So I think people do understand, look at what they've done, and feel like, you know, until they get a resolution with Watson, this is just going to be hard on the whole organization and the fan base, because there's nothing. You basically held hostage.
Rob Parker of The Odd Couple on Fox Sports Radio and Deadspin, our guest on the HR&P guest line. What is your stance on Deshaun Watson? Like, what is it going to take in terms of the legal resolution of things, and then what can the yield be in the offseason if things do get settled before the draft begins in 2022?
Yeah, this is a crazy story. You just wonder if maybe, you know, he should have settled a long time ago, and then he didn't really want to play with, you know, with the organization. But it's kind of weird to me. The whole thing is all over the place because, you know, he said that he wasn't happy with where the organization, and they traded Hopkins, but he signed his new contract after they traded Hopkins. So if you weren't happy with the organization, right, you probably shouldn't have signed that contract, but he signed it. I just think he's been all over the place. It's a shame to think of a talented guy not playing, sitting on the sideline in his career and flux over this whole thing. So I don't know. And I guess, you know, Miami was interested big time and wanted him to settle, and he didn't want to settle. And then He was going to settle. It just seems like it's a mess. I don't know where this is going. And then, you know, obviously there could be criminal charges and other stuff that could derail his football career, you know, in the future or maybe forever. We don't even know that. That's how scary it is. And even the idea that Miami was willing to roll the dice, not knowing, you know, what the future held, says something. But ultimately it didn't work out. So the Texans are stuck. They're in a bad spot.
Rob, you've been around the NFL for a long time. You've seen that rebuilds can happen fast in the league. You know, when can the Texans again be a playoff contender?
That's a good question, too. It all depends on, you know, what shakes down. If you make, you know, with the trade you make with, for Watson, what you can add to your team, drafting. Sometimes the NFL is set up that it shouldn't take you. Look at where the Patriots are. I mean, the Patriots went out. They spent some money in the offseason. They got a rookie quarterback. They got a great kicking game. They got a great defense. I mean, it didn't take long, right? I mean, they're now one of the best teams in the AFC. A year ago, people were saying how it was all about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick wasn't the greatest coach or whatever, because look what happened as soon as Brady left. And now, you know, things have turned around quickly. So the league is set up that in 2 or 3 years, unless you're the Detroit Lions, you can turn around your football team.
Rob, switching gears a little bit, but getting your perspective on the college football scene. There's a lot of parity in college football this year. Everybody's kicking around their own ideas about what the right number is for a playoff. Is it safe to say that you feel like, at least from the way the committee has handled everything, that it could be the polar opposite of the way the numbers and computers used to figure things out, and something's got to change? And what's your perspective? Is it 8 teams, 12 teams? What's the right number for a playoff?
I think it's still 4. I think that it's even hard to get competitive games in those 4 that we've had. Go look at some of the scores of games over the last few years. To put 8 or 12 teams, to me, would totally water down the playoff, would give you some lopsided. We saw at one point, do you remember the Michigan State beat Michigan and then played Ohio State and got run off the field? Or should they be in the college playoff? You know, should they be in there, a school like Michigan State? I don't know if there are 8 or 12 teams that are really viable for the college football playoffs. I think it's just would be watered down. You would minimalize the regular season, college football season, which I don't think you want to do. And it would just be, to me, too many schools. I know a lot of people want it to be 6 or 8 or 12. I just think, do we really want the NBA where more than half the teams make the playoffs? Look at the NBA the way we look at the regular season. It's like, we'll wait till a playoff. NHL, more than half of the teams make the playoffs. You know, baseball is still only has 10. Football has moved it up to 14. I just don't want it to be where everybody makes the playoffs. Or, you know, like if you go 12 deep, I think you're going to have schools that really can't compete for a national championship. They might be playing in the playoff game, but they're not really competing.
But what about the schools that, like, depending on what happens this weekend, that could be left on the outside looking in without ever getting their fair shake? You know, if Cincinnati beats Houston and we assume they're in, but Oklahoma State wins and Oklahoma State's had a hell of a season, the only way I'd push back on you is say 4 might be too little for me, because that Cinderella story or those remaining 2 basically right there on the cusp but on the outside looking in will never ever get their fair shake to know at the end of the day if they deserve to be pretenders or contenders.
I think that's a fair point, but I'll give you a better one. You know, you have 64 or 68 teams in the college basketball, and still we're still waiting for a mid-major to win a championship. It's been 100 years. I mean, how long since those guys you want to give a chance to, right? They haven't been able to break through. So I'm just not so sure that automatically opening up, you know, the college football is going to mean that one of those schools will finally break through and win a national championship. It sounds good. Be fair. Let's give Cincinnati, let's give some of these other schools a chance. And I'm not saying that they, if they play well enough and their schedule's good enough, that they shouldn't be considered. But I don't think, I'll ask you again, college basketball, give me the small school that got their opportunity and won a title.
Butler went to back-to-back national championships.
VCU, they might not win it all, but it's program changing and they're competitive on the biggest stage.
No, but if you could get to the championship game, you can win it. Did they win? Okay, you gave me one.
Gordon Hayward's shot doesn't go. It doesn't roll around one extra time. We might be talking about a whole different story.
Well, it's been a long time. I'm just saying. I think that that's where we are in the world. We want to make everything bigger, and bigger to me is not better. We can agree to disagree. I just don't think that.
Yeah. It's a good conversation. And that's why we do what we do, right? Rob, enjoy the conversation. Enjoy Houston. I hope you're getting some good food while you're in town. Best food city in the country.
You already know. Of course I'm going to have some good food. No doubt about it. I can't wait to get there this weekend, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks,
man. You got it. Rob Parker of The Odd Couple on Fox Sports Radio with Chris Broussard, and also writes for Deadspin.com. You know what? The interesting thing when you talk about college football playoff, like, and you know that I always fight for the little guy, being the Cougar that I am. I just love the idea of an 8 or 12 team playoff, because at least you have everybody that gives it a chance to get to a playoff and win it. College football is the only sport in the entire world where not every team in its league has a chance to win its title. You see the expansion talks of 8. You see the expansion talks of 12. I like that just because it's a real playoff. And the other argument that I always hear whenever you talk, when people say, like, no expansion for playoff, 4 is plenty. 4 is what you're going to get as a champion anyways. But then those dudes will go, like, bet on the MAC. Like, you know what I mean? Like, more football is good. Like, sure.
You saw my face. I was fired up. I didn't know how far we were going to take this, because we only had one segment with Rob. But I'm like, look, I think you're naive to think that 4 gets it done and satisfies those and is the ideal situation for the NCAA or for any team that's on the cusp. I think that's why we've kicked around anything from 6 to 8 to 12, and how you get there is, and even when he brought up the argument about the regular season, no one wants to see Alabama play St. Mary's School of the whatever. They'd rather see an extra game of competitive nature that the NCAA would love too, because whether you call it a kickoff classic or you have a name for it or a pre-playoff game, however you set it up, semifinals, quarterfinals, however, it's going to sell. You're going to have advertising, TV rights, and it's going to be an attractive game that everybody is going to be dialed into, as opposed to one of those non-conference games. And again, you're talking about teams that are getting left on the wayside, and all they did was play their schedule. And that's what you want to kind of omit from the process. You want to get to a point where there's no school at the end of the year that goes, we got screwed, we got left out, we didn't get a fair shake. You can do that with 8 or 12.
I just want to eliminate the bias, because, I mean, John Harris, who does a great job evaluating draft prospects, he released his top 100 today of draft prospects coming into the NFL draft next year. 4 of those dudes were from Cincinnati, which is tied for the 4th most of anybody else in the country. And if you told somebody that, they'd be like, no way, you're crazy. Cincinnati, they're talentless. They don't have any talent. They just play in a bad conference, which isn't the case. And the thing that you spoke of, too, about the college football playoff and the expansion of it, give everybody a shot.
Yeah.
Give everybody opportunity. And the regular season aspect of it, too. Like, people were saying that it would ruin the regular season. It's a real chance to increase the regular season, because now you can play those out-of-conference super games, and it's not going to have as much sway, because if you win your conference, you still go to the playoff anyways. And now you want to schedule those games too, because if you win it, then you help your chances of your resume being boosted for a potential wild card if you don't win your conference.
Look at, and I give you an example of 2 schools, but in different situations, that also did it for this exact same reason. Notre Dame, whether Brian Kelly leaves or stays, Notre Dame played one of their games against Wisconsin this year. Why? Because Wisconsin was going to be a rated team, and that was going to play into some things at the end of the year. Now, Wisconsin has since fallen out last week because of a ridiculous loss, but if they were still there, that would have been one of the bargaining chips for Notre Dame to say, forget Brian Kelly, we're still playing opponents that are worthy of making us a contender for one of those spots. From the same perspective, Wisconsin took on the game because they knew with Ohio State and with the fact that the conference champion is going to be the one that's going to be elevated the way the system currently sits, that if they can say, hey, in our non-conference, we played Notre Dame, they were ranked, they were a top 10, we should use that as elevation and a bargaining chip, whether it's a New Year's Day game or more. That's why these things are happening. That's why you need everybody to get their fair shake. That's why I couldn't disagree more, but we only had so much time.
713-780-ESPN. What side of it are you on? 713-780-3776. Also, when we return, Cowboys win without McCarthy. Taysom Hill shows us why he's not a quarterback. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Toss to Pollard. And there he goes. Tony Pollard down the sideline. Jets are on. Touchdown, Dallas. 58 yards, and Tony Pollard just showed the world how fast he is.
Colt, the Cowboys roll over the Saints, 27-17, a game which the Cowboys, like, it wasn't a must-win, but you go into New Orleans without Alvin Kamara, without two offensive linemen, with Taysom Hill making his first start at quarterback this season. You lose that game, it's not a good look. They go into New Orleans and get the victory, 27-17. Tony Pollard, by the way, looking, most of the damage that he did was on that 57-yard touchdown run. I said it early in the year. I think I kind of talked you into it as well. I think you kind of came onto my side of things. Tony Pollard's a better running back right now than Ezekiel Elliott.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And I was talking to shout out to my man Greg Vega, senior and junior, but Wired Electric. Also, they were doing work at the house. But both of them are massive, massive Cowboys fans. And we were having that discussion this morning that you better hope Zeke's hurt. You better hope that that's that knee that's holding him back, because one, the guy behind you is better than you are, as you just stated, but also two, for all the guy that forced you into paying before you had to pay him and said he was worth all of that and he was one of the best running backs in football, he might be the Tyrod Taylor equivalent from the running back position of where he sits on the running back food chain right now in terms of a top 20-40 pick, because he looks awful. He's collecting a bunch of money to do nothing, and it's holding the Cowboys back. That was embarrassing. You hope it's only injury-related and he still has plenty left in the tank. Otherwise, if you're Jerry Jones and the Cowboys, boy, some precedent was just set there that what we did, we may never do again.
I would also say that with the contract that he has, it makes him almost untradeable at this point. Like, if Ezekiel Elliott's playing for a different team next season, it's not because he got traded. It's because he's been outright released.
Right.
One thing that if you're like Mike McCarthy, though, and you're Kellen Moore, and you're looking at just the remainder of this season – how about a redistribution of how many carries these dudes are getting?
Sure.
Ezekiel Elliott getting 13 carries, Tony Pollard 7. And look, the Saints have a very good front seven. They have a good rush defense. It's why the rush numbers outside of that 57-yard touchdown run weren't all that great. But if I want one guy getting twice as many carries as the other guy, I want it flipped.
We talked about that, and we talked about going into the game about the run defenses and the front sevens and everything that was going on. But the thing is, Jeremy, on top of that, I'm not having Tony Pollard run back punts and kicks anymore. I'm not putting him in a situation where he may become vulnerable for my team, because I need him more than I need Ezekiel Elliott right now, and he's proven that. He's shown that. Plus, he catches the ball out of the backfield. He's versatile. He's agile, and he gets you everything you need from a running back to keep that offense balanced that Zeke's not doing. You'll deal with Zeke at the end of the year, because I'm with you 110%. It's just like Emmitt Smith, but at a different point in their careers, where if you were not going to be a Cowboy for your whole career, it was going to be your choice, you were going to be released, you were going to find a new place to play. That's what they're going to have to do with Zeke. They're going to have egg on their face. It's going to be a bad look, but that's something I think it's going to be a hard decision in the offseason, but one that they're going to have to sit down and evaluate, because I don't think he's got anything left, and I'm not sure he's ever going to be the back he once was. From the McCarthy standpoint, the other thing that I would say, for all of the good that they're coming out of this game, the way Quinn handled that team, the way his defense still played the way they played, and the fact that the offense was just fine, I'm telling you once again, he should be worried about the fact that his job's in jeopardy at the end of this season, because they know that they got a coordinator that's going to be a hot commodity as a head coach. They know they got a former NFL head coach that's a D coordinator. They got the defense not only playing great, but he can handle things. They don't need Mike McCarthy in Dallas.
You couldn't wait to bash Mike McCarthy.
I'm not bashing him, being honest about it.
That was a pretty good little bash, though. I mean, you kind of buried the guy. That was a pretty good little bash.
I buried him before the season started because I told the Cowboys they made the bad move in the first place.
Yeah, it was just an example of what you've been saying all the whole year. On the other side of things, the Saints offense, 17 points against the Dallas defense. Poor Taysom Hill talked about the finger that he hurt and said, yeah, it did bother him.
I mean, yeah, it took a little getting used to. Anytime, you know, you put something else on a finger and, you know, traction on the ball and stuff. But it was okay.
Taysom Hill, I'm telling you, the splint on the finger is the reason he was 19 for 41 and threw for four interceptions, and is the reason he's not an NFL quarterback.
No. The reason was he was making those wobbly off-target throws before he did anything to deserve the splint on the finger when he followed through and hit a forearm of a defender. The fact of the matter is exactly what I've said all along. And first of all, don't ever call him poor Taysom Hill, because the one thing is, no matter how bad he is at the quarterback position, he keeps getting raises and pay increases and extensions. The fact of the matter is, he's best suited to be what he is, which is what I've said, that Swiss Army knife that only a couple teams in this league could possibly have, that gives defensive coordinators fits, trying to figure out, is he going to be in the backfield? Is he going to be in the slot? Is he an H-back? What's he doing next? How is he going to affect the way I play my defense? That gives them an honest weapon that they can use. Not that they have many other alternatives for this season, but the fact that his contract is what it is and he's going to be a Saint means he's not going to be the starting quarterback for the Saints going forward. And he's proven that every single time they've put him in that position.
He's not a quarterback in the NFL, and I've felt that way for a long time. I felt that way whenever it was a Jameis Winston versus Taysom Hill conversation. Now, I still think he's a better option for this offense than Trevor Siemian. He still gives them a better chance to win than Trevor Siemian. I realize that a game after he threw four interceptions, that's not a very popular opinion. But they're also not going to win with him at quarterback whenever they fall behind. Like, the game script has to be totally different with him at quarterback, where you have to have a little bit of a lead, you have to sit on the lead, because he still did some positive things offensively. The four interceptions, terrible. 19 for 41, terrible. But he ran for 100 yards. I think the ball moves better with Taysom Hill at quarterback than Trevor Siemian. But long term, no, Taysom Hill is not a quarterback in the league. And this is another example of him proving it.
See, I disagree, because the one thing that with Siemian is he has his moments. It's not the inconsistent. The one thing we know for sure is Taysom Hill just can't throw.
To be honest with you, when they fall behind like they did in the second half, they should have brought Siemian in. Because Simeon's a better thrower of the
football. I was hoping they could blame. They had a built-in excuse. Blame the finger.
Yep.
Take him out or put him in his regular position and let Siemian at least take a shot at having to throw the football. Because even when they were playing from behind, most teams will open it up and throw.
Yep.
The only thing that was working was any quarterback option where he was still running the football, whereas at least Siemian could complete a few passes. When you look at how open some of his receivers were and how perplexed, shaking their head, going back to the huddle they were with where the ball was.
Underthrown. I mean, it was bad.
You can't beat a bad team that way. You can't beat the Cowboys that way.
There was, I forget the receiver, but it was in the first half where he got rid of it late. He underthrew his receiver when a decent quarterback would have been a touchdown pass. He's a terrible thrower of the football. Still believe he's a better option than Trevor Siemian, but whenever you fall behind like that, Taysom Hill can't throw the ball 41 times in a game. They should almost platoon him. Like, if you're winning, Taysom Hill. If you're behind, Trevor Siemian. To be honest with you, neither one's a good option, and they're not a playoff team in the NFC. Antonio Brown suspended 3 games by the NFL for violating the NFL COVID rules. He got outed by his former chef that he turned in a fake vaccination. The NFL suspending him after 3 games after they investigated the situation. Here's Bruce Arians about Antonio Brown whenever the story first came out on November 19th.
Coach, a report surfaced yesterday about allegations that one of your players, Antonio Brown, may have procured a fake vaccine card. Can you speak to that? Do you have any reason to think that he's produced a fake vaccine card?
None whatsoever. We did our due diligence. The league will do theirs, and it has nothing to do with the Giants game.
Ooh, well, your due diligence was poor because the NFL found out that he and 2 others turned in the fake vaccination. Antonio Brown suspended 3 games. A lot of people are calling for Tampa Bay to just flat out release Antonio Brown after this.
Well, it's definitely something that needs to be looked into. And again, if you're Bruce Arians as a head coach, and we talk about this on a daily basis with how there's no communication between the communications department, the general manager, and the head coach, Bruce Arians now, and Nelson Louise is their PR guy. I should text him and say, Nelly, you got to get in your boy's ear before he gets in front of a podium, because there's a way to spin that without spinning it like that and just say, hey, we ask all the players the same question. Get us your card if you have one. And if you don't, go get one or tell us what you're going to do. If he turned in a card and he said it's a valid card, we have no reason to believe that it's not a valid card. So that's what we went with. If the league wants to investigate, let them do that. But answering it like that just makes you look absolutely ridiculous.
Now, I think it's ridiculous, too, when you compare this situation to the Aaron Rodgers situation. Antonio Brown flat out lied and was acting like a vaccinated player
right. When
he was not a vaccinated player. Aaron Rodgers, not completely innocent. He was breaking the media rules whenever he was speaking in front of the podium. But he also abided to the rules of the non-vax players. He was getting tested every single day. The team and the NFL knew.
Right, correct.
Whereas Antonio Brown lied to the team, lied to the NFL, was acting like a vaccinated player when he completely was not. He wasn't going with the test that Aaron Rodgers was getting every single day. So it's not even close to the same situation between the two. What should the Tampa Bay Buccaneers do with Antonio Brown? The good news for Antonio Brown, he'll be back in 3 days. He's going to miss the next 2 weeks anyways because of the injury.
See, I was wondering if they were going to try and sweep that, say he could have played and we'll just use those as the games that he's suspended for, because that's always an issue when you get these things that players that aren't exactly healthy come back anyway so they can continue to recover and recoup and do rehab, and they weren't going to play anyway. But, you know, Dr. Dre on 290 is grasping at straws because he's a massive Cowboy fan. And he's hoping that Rodgers got punished more because he knows that's their only chance of trying to win in a playoff game. But it's night and day different. It's much worse to do what the Buccaneers did because of the way that AB and the Buccaneers handled it, as opposed to the way the league knew about what Rodgers was doing, because the doctors were looking at what he did and if it was going to be valid – as a way to say you were vaccinated. At the end of the day, they said it wasn't, and then it was just on the player himself for how he handled it as it relates to the media, not the way AB was doing it on a daily basis in the locker room and not following the protocols. There, we're done with that.
And he was testing every day, whereas right. AB was not, because he was acting like he was a vaccinated player when he was not. 713-780-3776. When we return, it's the third day of Texans Christmas. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.